There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Packers Podcast. My name is Michael Cohen, and I'm here, as usual, with Bob McGinn, my fellow beat writer for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Bob, good afternoon to you.
It's 2 o'clock on Sunday, Mike.
2 o'clock on Sunday. We are, what, Friday? 3 days removed from the Thanksgiving game between the Packers and the Bears. And we've got, what, four days left until Detroit?
Yep.
So, first, we're going to start with recap of the music there. This was a song I thought you might have recognized because it was recorded in, or released, I should say, in 1981. But you didn't know this one.
No, I didn't.
It's sort of a funky R&B kind of tune by Carl Carlton. The song is called She's a Bad Mamma Jamma. It peaked at number 2 on the soul charts in the United States and reached number 22 on just the regular top 100, top 50 charts. I first heard that song in Memphis when I lived in Memphis prior to taking the job here in Wisconsin. There's a street in Memphis called Beale Street, which is a smaller version of Bourbon Street with just lots of bars, lots of music, no open container laws, all the good things you need on a street. And I was in this bar. It was in B.B. King's House of Blues that they have there on the corner. And I was listening to the house band, which was the Preston Shannon band. And they played this song. And I thought their rendition of it was really cool with a sweet guitar solo in the middle, a bass solo, just all kinds of cool stuff. So I went home, Googled it, and I've been listening to it ever since.
Have you?
Yeah.
Carlton.
By Carl Carlton. Yeah, pretty cool song. It was a certified gold record. But, you know, there are more important things to discuss than the music, and one of them was a dastardly defeat for the Buckeyes. Just kidding, the Wolverines. Oh, it was a day that Mr. McGinn did not enjoy. Bob, tell us about it.
So I did my work yesterday, and I taped it at about 6 o'clock, Mike. Commercial-free television, you know. And it's my game of the year. It's the only game I care about all year, really, you know. So I become a fan for one day of the year.
Except for the other ones where you were in my hotel room at various points screaming at the television on the road trips. But yeah, one day a year.
I'm a maniac. And my wife heard me down there, and she knew the score.
We're talking about Ohio State, Michigan, for anyone that didn't pick up on that.
But there wasn't any sounds emanating from the basement, and she was wondering what was going on, because she knew the score, and she figured the bad part would have hit at some point here. It was such a drubbing, there was nothing even to get mad about. And just a couple of points, you know. My son is a Big Ten expert, graduated from Iowa, and he is on top of the Big Ten with his friends, and they really know this scene big time. And he's a very, very wise sports fan. He truly is, old Charles. We discussed on Thanksgiving Michigan, Ohio State, and he's saying, Dad, Ohio State had 5 first downs against Michigan State, and they had the blow up with Ezekiel Elliott. He said, Michigan's going to win this game. I said, I hope you're right, but Charlie, this is the greatest rivalry in sports. Whatever came before has no bearing on anything. When these teams show up for this game, they're just going to be motivated beyond belief. Doesn't really make any difference where it is or what the it really doesn't. The hatred is so intense on this thing. Well, and I knew Ohio State had better players. I mean, I had checked the NFL prospects on these teams all year. I've been watching Michigan. I've seen Ohio State a little bit. And I was well aware that they had great talent. And Harbaugh's done. Can you imagine 369 yards rushing to Michigan's 57? Bo is rolling over in his grave upstairs. I mean, it was a butt kicking. Barrett was a magician on the read option, the zone read. I had no idea where the ball was. I'm sure at the spur of the moment, the Michigan defenders had no idea. They just killed them. The crowd was gone, you know, by the start of the fourth quarter. It was a brutal whipping. The look on Harbaugh's face. And I'll tell you, Urban Meyer's interview at the end of that game, it really said it all. Now, he didn't win a national title at Ohio State, did he? Weren't they second?
They just won last year.
They won the whole thing last year?
Yeah.
Okay, with Cardale Jones. Yeah. And all. Okay. So he's just won a national title, right? And his quote was, I was listening to it pretty quick, but his quote basically said, this is his greatest win at Ohio State. And I'll tell you why. Harbaugh's first year, right? A guy who has built his San Francisco empire on playing physical football in Ann Arbor, 7 days after the blow-up with Elliott, people doubting Ohio State and the entire program, and to go in there and throttle them physically from start to finish, that's what this rivalry is. You throw it all away, and if you win it, you never forget it, especially if you win it in this kind of fashion.
Final score?
42-13 before 111,829. Back to the drawing board. Harbaugh's got to get players. For him even to be in position to beat Ohio State and Michigan State the first year, to me, is a coup, an unbelievable accomplishment. Now he knows the road that is ahead.
How many in a row is that for the Buckeyes?
Do we have to get into that, Mike?
Yes, we do.
I think it's 11 out of 12.
11.
I've lost count. And this is one thing I should never lose count of.
What's the all-time record? Do you have any idea?
Thank you.
Okay.
I saw it on the tube. I knew it was close to this. Blue 58, Buckeyes 48, and I think six ties. This is the 112th meeting.
Okay.
It's the winningest program in college football history, Michael. I want to remind you of that.
What are you thinking next year?
They got to get a quarterback now. They're not going to have a gift coming in from Iowa, but Harbaugh developed him. I have no idea. He's got to get a lot better in the offensive line. He's losing a bunch of prospects to the draft, too. They're going to have, Michigan's going to have four seniors drafted on defense, maybe five.
One more year, and then you can be a fan again, Bob.
Thank you. 365 days, Mike. Now I'm going to go back to my unbiased self.
But before that, before you were down in the dumps, we had a nice Thanksgiving, didn't we, Bob?
Yeah. Tell us about it, Mike.
Yeah, so I was over here at the McGinn headquarters, just a few minutes away from Lambeau Field, and I got to meet the whole family. I met the kids. I met the grandkids. I met the children-in-law. It was a lot of fun. And how about that stuffed French toast, that Door County stuffed French toast? It was good, wasn't it?
We discussed that, didn't we,
yeah,
last week?
Yeah, we did. It was good.
It was different, and it was good.
I liked it.
Pat did the job on that.
Yep. Yep.
She fed the family. Yep.
But the grandkids won the day, as expected, with their exuberance, their ear-curdling screams.
Pot banging.
Yeah, pot banging. There were pot lids banged together to mimic cymbals at one point.
I was inciting Christina louder and louder. I was screaming at her, and she was.
And there were games. I caught you playing bingo with Cheerios.
Turkey bingo.
Turkey bingo using Cheerios to mark off the spaces.
Yep.
There was hide and seek with turkey-themed, I guess, placards you would call them.
12 of them, yeah.
Yeah, 12 little turkey placards we had to hide. And there was a turkey walk. Explain the turkey walk.
Pat somehow, I don't know, in her creative inventiveness, she came up and she cut out these turkey feet.
Right.
How long? A foot long?
Yeah, a foot long. Probably about, what, 30 of them?
At least. And she spread them around the room over there, living room, and the kids walked around on these turkey feet.
To music. That
to
was
music.
The important part. She'd picked out a bunch of good dance songs for little kids, and they were having a blast.
Yeah, it was quite a day.
And I will say that that the hide-and-seek game was so successful that one of the placards is still missing because we've got some expert hiders in this family, I guess.
Uncle Charlie hit it too good.
I guess so. He forgot where it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it was a good Thanksgiving. We enjoyed it, and I'm glad I was able to come over here and hang out, because otherwise I would have been sitting in my apartment doing nothing.
Glad you came, Mike. You were very well received, and thank you very much.
But in fairness, I do have to mention my humble defeat.
Yours
was Ohio State. Mine was Syracuse. The UConn Huskies, my team growing up, my home state of Connecticut, they played Syracuse in an old school Big East matchup in a tournament in the Bahamas. And the Huskies were humbled, Bob.
Wow.
They played a terrible game. They didn't play well at all. Syracuse shot better, executed better. It was the Michael Cohen Bowl. you know, where I went to school and where I grew up. And the Huskies came out on the wrong end. Dropped another one the next day, too.
They
rough,
did.
Rough week.
Wow. So your alma mater did you in, huh?
Yep.
That's funny.
Yep. Yep.
Okay.
All right. Well, I think it's time to get started with this podcast here. So we'd like to say a quick thank you to Cannon and Dunphy, our sponsors, for their support of our Journal Sentinel coverage and of this podcast. And with that, we can move on to the Bears. Bob, what did we watch Thursday night in an absolute downpour? What did we see?
A second home loss to a losing NFC North team in 12 days.
Crazy.
I knew the Bears were a hard team to beat. Enough scouts and coaches had told me that in the days before the game. Cutler outplayed Rodgers. The Bears won the turnover battle 2-0. Victory. Defeat.
It was
a scoreless second half, Mike.
A scoreless second half. They'd scored in every half this season, I think.
Okay.
I think. I have to go back and double check that, but I think that's the case. Maybe.
The game went right down to the end, didn't it?
Right down to the end. The Packers, once again, just as they did in a couple of games this season, they've had, you know, chances to mount either game-tying or game-winning drives, and, you know, it obviously fell short against the Panthers. The field goal from Mason Crosby went awry against the Lions, and then Rodgers had four chances from the 8-yard line to try and punch it in 24 feet, and four times they came up empty.
It's terrible. He's paid to do that. McCarthy's paid to win a game like that. And they failed. One strike in there, and this is all forgotten, and it's 20-17 victory, and they're ahead of the Vikings and whatnot. They couldn't make a play.
Instead, they dropped from first in the division down to second. You know, that race is getting tighter and tighter as the season dwindles here. But I think it's important to talk about how well Jay Cutler played. I mean, he'd been smashed around by this Packers team and Dom Capers over the years. What did you think was so impressive about the way he played in really, you know, terrible conditions?
Well, when I wrote that column Wednesday night, and it appeared in Thursday's paper, when I was doing the scouting report, three of these people, I just brought up Cutler's name. I didn't know. I had no idea I was going to write about Cutler for Thursday. I was looking for the notes for Tuesday's paper. And all three of them just went off on Cutler, how much better he was. And I had seen Cutler periodically, but had no idea that the guy had improved this much. But when they all started saying the same thing, I knew I had to write it for Thursday because he's obviously the key figure for the Bears. And everything those guys said turned out to be true. He doesn't have a good offensive line. He doesn't have weapons. He didn't have his tight end. He's playing with Mark Mariani, for heaven's sakes, as a little slight veteran kickoff returner as the number three wideout. He didn't really care. There's pressure in his face. He's moving up into those A and B gaps, just like that opposing defensive coach said. And he's just standing there, and he's putting the ball on people. And he's getting hit a little bit and jostled around. Doesn't really make any difference. Now, he got lucky. Rollins dropped that pick on his blown shotgun snap. Rollins really should have had that recovery too, Mike.
Yep.
That's two turnovers for Rollins, and we'd be looking at Cutler different. Okay. But a lot of this stuff tends to even out. And
Rodgers, on the other side, had a pick taken away by a really soft pass interference penalty. So it goes both ways.
So Cutler, huh?
I was impressed.
Best he ever played against the Packers.
And it's funny because it's not like the guy threw for 300 yards and five touchdowns. He did what was asked of him. He protected the football. They won the game.
Simple in the rain.
That. Pouring rain.
Aaron Rodgers' passer rating is obviously not the be-all and end-all of quarterback evaluation, but he has a lower rating the last five games, Mike, than his opposing QB.
Wow. I didn't know that.
That's mind-boggling.
Because Bridgewater played a pretty good game statistically.
Yeah, statistically. Yeah. Five in a row? Are you kidding me?
I wonder if that's ever happened.
I would think not.
Maybe really early in his career?
Perhaps. He had a pretty good rating in 08, too, his first year
Did
as
he?
A starter. Yeah, he was in the 90s, I think.
Wow. It's something.
So who are those QBs? Let's look at this. I can't even remember. So let's go back. We got Cutler, Bridgewater, Stafford, Cam Newton, and Mr. Peyton Manning.
Yeah, it was about the only good game Manning has had this season. Threw for 340 yards.
Did he have a better one than Rivers that day? He must have. The stat is 5 in a row.
I think Rivers' quarterback rating was hurt because quarterback rating, or passer rating rather, is influenced a lot by completion percentage. And since Rivers threw 60, you know, he had his fair share of incompletions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the offense dropped passes, Mike. What did you think of the running game with the line and Eddie Lacy?
Well, you know, I mean, for the second game in a row, Lacy really looked good for the most part. You know, he's running physically. He's spinning. He's powering through guys. You know, as I wrote in my film observations that went online today, there was one play where he dragged a pile 6 yards. I mean, we're not just talking one guy. There was a pile of bodies, and he just kept churning and churning, and 6 yards later, they finally brought him down. So in some ways, it looks like the old Eddie Lacy, but in other ways, it's like, you know, what's really going on? And of course, I'm talking about the fumbles. You know, he's had more fumbles this year than he had, I think, in the last 2 years combined, maybe. He only had one, I think, his rookie year. Let me pull that up real quick just so I can make sure.
Right now he's got 4 with 2 lost.
Right, right. But I think the 4 number is higher than what he had. Let's see.
I'm going to say no.
No? Okay.
I'll bet he had 5 total.
In his career?
Yeah, first 2 years.
Let's see. One fumble his first year, 1 lost.
Okay.
3 fumbles his second year, 2 lost.
Okay.
So he's got 4 for his career and 4 this year, right?
He had 4-3 the first 2 years, and he's 4-2 now.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Right. Yep.
And he had another one, as you've referenced in some of your work, that was taken away barely by his knee being down. I think it was his knee.
2 or 3, Mike.
Yeah. So,
this year.
I mean, there's been some issues with ball security there. In terms of the way the line was blocking for him, I thought John Kuhn had a number of nice blocks freeing up Lacy, especially on that first or second drive in the third quarter. I thought that Kuhn showed a nice ability to get to the second level and lock on to a linebacker, and Lacy was really able to just follow him. But, I mean, McCarthy said it at his press conference this morning, you know, if you can't protect the football, you're not going to stay on the field. I mean, Lacy can run for 200 yards if he wants to, but if he's fumbling and giving the ball away and you're not going to stay on the field. You're going to make your team lose games if you're turning the ball over. So I don't really know what they're going to do going forward because the last 2 weeks, Lacy has looked exponentially more effective than Starks as a runner, certainly in by volume anyway. But can you afford to keep him on the field if he's fumbling?
Well, let's go back to the play at the goal line, Mike. What did you make of that after the screen pass?
Yeah, so he catches the screen pass. And by the way, tremendous block from J.C. Treader on that play where he dove backwards to take out a linebacker that had snuck in behind him. Heck of a block. Shows how athletic Treader is. Lacy takes off down the field. Lang escorts him into the end zone. And he drops the ball. You know, the ref said it was as he crossed the goal line. And just a fraction of the nose of that football got over the line for the touchdown. But I just don't get it. I mean, he's got the screen right there, so if he's looking up, he can see where he is. If he's looking down, he can see the line. You know, right in front of him, he can see how far he is from the back of the end zone. I don't know why in the world he dropped the ball. I don't know.
Was it some reaction just trying to stick it to people who have been over him or fans that have been on him or something?
Could have been.
I mean, I don't know.
Could have been. It was stunning. And then you saw his reaction on the sideline, you know, when it was announced that it was being reviewed. He's talking to Sam Gash and talking to, you know, some of the other players on the sideline. And he looked like, you know, genuinely concerned that, you know, it might be taken away.
He did.
And it was close. And, you know, then, of course, they say that the play stands and Lacy, you know, visibly exhales a little bit and they move on. But, I mean, you're talking about if that had been ruled a fumble in addition to the other fumble that, you know, was legitimate, I mean, you'd be talking about compounding problems, really, for him. It's strange. I don't get it.
So, this week now in Detroit?
Weather won't be an issue, so that'll help.
Detroit had a bad run defense until the last 3 games, Mike, and now they're playing much better against the run. I don't really know why. Pretty much the same people. Detroit can be run on.
Okay.
Big time. They got to do it. they have to have a good running game over there. You don't want Ziggy Ansah teeing off.
No.
That's a hard man to stop. He had 3.5 sacks against the Eagles, you know.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I think he leads the league with 11.5 right now.
Okay. So what else do we want to talk about from this Bears game? I think we need to talk about, well, Dayton Jones and the comments he made, you know, after the game. You know, with the loss being what it was to a team with an inferior record, a longtime rival, you know, and the day being what it was, celebrating Brett Favre and his number being retired and Bart Starr being here despite, you know, some of the health issues that he's had. I wanted to write my story just about, you know, what the players thought of losing, you know, on this particular day, given the ceremonial aspect of it. And just about everyone in the locker room sort of said the same thing, which is a loss is a loss. We don't really care, you know, that Brett was here. You know, it would have hurt either way. It doesn't matter. You know, Chris Banjo said that. Nate Palmer said that. Richard Rodgers said that. On and on and on. Dayton Jones was one of the few players I thought who either was more open about it or just had a different view of it. And Dayton was really, really forceful in his comments. You know, he was asked, you know, does losing when Brett is here and Bart is here, does that make it worse? And he said, you know, we've got to come out fired up. You step on the field at Lambeau, Thanksgiving game, Brett Favre's jersey being retired, I feel like it's a slap in his face. And then he went on to say, we came out flat on all sides of the ball. That's not us. My focus is on the Chicago Bears tonight, but when you've got a guy like Brett Favre and Bart Starr coming back, you want to win games. We had a lot of alumni here tonight. We were playing amongst some of the greats. For them to see that, for them to come out on Thanksgiving away from their families, we didn't get the job done. Pretty strong words.
Yeah, it was. Kind of an indictment of the whole operation, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. They weren't as energetic as they were in Minnesota. That was obvious.
What do you think? Do you think that the guys who wouldn't mention that or wouldn't comment on it the way that Jones did, do you think they felt it on the inside? Or do you think some of these guys are so, because they didn't play with Favre, because, you know, Starr is so far before their time, that it just didn't quite resonate as much as it did maybe with Dayton? What do you think?
I
got to think there's other guys in the locker room that felt the same way that he did.
True, and just
and didn't
want to
say it. Yeah.
But to them also, Favre doesn't really mean anything, you know?
Okay.
He was out of here and, what, 08 was his last year? Yeah. It's a long time ago.
So he wouldn't have overlapped with a whole ton of guys in this locker room.
These guys were in high school then.
Yeah.
They saw him play, but they don't know anything about what he meant here. And they don't know anything about tradition of the franchise. They see some pictures on the wall here, but they really don't. Would any players just leaf through a press guide, do you think, and look at the history section?
I think some of them would be interested in doing that.
Do you?
Yeah.
I just don't know. I really don't know.
I think some of them would look through it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you never know. I mean, I'm sure there's franchises or colleges or, you know, whatever you want to call it in the country that actually give their players little pamphlets on the history and things. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, for all we know, these guys, when they get here, when they're first drafted or first signed or whatever, they may be given some sort of a historical packet on the team. You never know.
For sure. Yep.
But yeah, really strong comments by Dayton. And, you know, one more quote I'll share from him.
Okay.
He said, this is what I ended my story with. He said, to play here as many years, and he's talking about Favre, so to play here as many years as Favre did, to get his jersey retired tonight and coming up short, that's not us at all. We've got to come out and do a better job and finish on all levels. And that last part is something that a lot of his teammates echoed. They said, we need to finish games stronger. And that goes back to what we talked about a few minutes ago, where they had a chance against the Carolina. They had a chance against the Lions. They had a chance against the Bears. 3 out of their 4 losses, they had the ball with a chance to either tie or win the game. And 3 out of 3 times, they came up short.
Yeah.
So it's a problem.
They could have tied the all-time series, Mike. To me, that means something to me. It could have been 93-93-6, and now the Bears are up by 2. They need a sweep next year to tie, but McCarthy, he had won, 10 of the last 11 against the Bears, I believe?
Sounds right.
They just dominated the series. And, you know, the Bears played them tough down in Soldier Field. Let's not forget that.
No, they did.
That was a one possession game, 8 points, right?
And a lot of that, I'm sure. I mean, you know, part of it is a credit to Chicago just for, you know, playing a tough game. But I think also the emotion of the new coach, the new scheme, the new season, all that plays into it. But, you know, like you said, I mean, what this game came down to is really two things: Cutler not making mistakes, and Rodgers coming up short in a clutch moment. That's what it came down to me anyway.
Boy, look what Vic Fangio is playing with on defense. I mean, Sutton, a starting defensive lineman, inactive, very surprisingly. I was stunned by that. He doesn't show. They're playing with that rookie free agent inside backer in nickel and dime. He played a ton of snaps. Jonathan Anderson, 58, the guy that Treader blocked on the screen, played really well.
Mm-hmm.
He did a lot of things. It was a heck of a really good play.
I thought Prusinski played pretty well, too, in the back end of the defense.
He certainly did, and he had a rough game against Denver the week before, 4 days earlier. He had, you know, the strip on Lacy and the touchdown saving tackle on Starks on that screen.
Lang missed that block. And you saw it when after the play, Lang pounded his fist into the ground 3 or 4 times. He knew it. He knew what that play meant.
I still think Starks should have got that ball in the end zone.
Sure.
So, you know, people talk about, you're talking generalities. Well, there's just a number of plays here, Mike. You add them up, and that's defeat. And that's the way pro football is. I mean, Lang's block, right? Lacy's fumble. I mean, those are, we can go on, but, you know.
James Jones pass interference penalty.
Rollins drop pick.
Yep.
I mean,
Rollins missing the fumble recovery.
Yeah.
A lot of chances there.
And if we could go to, if we were looking at it from the Bears' point of view, we could get 5 plays there, too.
Sure.
You know.
I'll tell you who else I thought played really well. I was impressed with Tracy Porter. Played with a little swagger, I thought, throughout the game.
Amazing. He's with his 5th team, Mike.
Former Saint?
Yeah, Super
who
Bowl
else?
Hero. Washington last year. He's really just, he's just become kind of a discard guy, a scrap heaper.
And he was essentially playing as their number one, wasn't he?
I don't know. Fuller's come back. No, he's a number one pick last
sure.
year. Bryce Callahan, the nickelback, rookie free agent, 5'9".
Yep.
Goes nose-to-nose against Cobb, and he played well. Now, this guy's got both he and Prusinski, for guys off the street, they both have tremendous athletic numbers, like 11-foot broad jumps on these two guys. When I was looking them up days before the game, I couldn't believe, but that's what Ryan Pace is bringing in there, these phenomenal athletes and trying to coach them.
And they were starting. I mean, we talked about, you know, the fact that they still don't have the type of players necessarily that they want, really. They started Bruce Gaston.
Yeah. I mean, I like Bruce Gaston.
So do I.
But
I don't think he's a starter.
No, I don't either. He starts for Sutton.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ego Ferguson's on IR. So, I mean, they're hurting, too. They're hurting probably more. Well, Martellus Bennett wasn't in uniform. I would dare say they've had more injuries than Green Bay.
Was McPhee their best player on defense?
Yes, and he's dragged down. He only played like 50% of the snaps because of all his injuries.
Yeah.
And won the game at Lambeau Field on Brett Favre retirement night. Wow.
Crazy.
To say those words is a little bit stunning.
Anything else you want to bring up from that game?
I don't think so. You?
I'm good.
All right.
All right, let's take a short break for a word from our sponsor, and we'll be back with a look ahead to the Lions.
At Cannon and Dunphy, we're proud of our winning reputation. We're also proud to be the exclusive sponsor of the excellent Journal Sentinel coverage of our great football team. I'm Bill Cannon. To learn more about our winning team, go to our website.
All right, so let's move on to the Lions. We've got another Thursday night game here, another national television game, but the Lions look a little bit different than the last time we saw them. Some changes.
They won 3 in a row, and the Lions are 4-7, and here they are. So they got some injuries. Let's go through that. We've seen this team 2 weeks ago. Glover Quinn, arguably their best player on defense. He's the captain of the ship back there, their free safety. He's got an ankle injury from the Eagle game on Thanksgiving. He's iffy. Now, this is before practice on Wednesday. Monday. We don't know what's really Sunday this
Sunday.
Is.
Sunday. Pick a day.
It's our Wednesday. Day. Yeah. So we don't know. If he doesn't play, that's a problem. Issa Abdul-Quidus?
Caduce. That's
okay.
How it was pronounced on the last broadcast anyway.
We know he's a tough guy, Mike.
Big hitter.
Yep. He had already displaced James Ahedibo, an old starter in the Super Bowl for the Patriots about 5 years ago. Ahedibo will have to start this game. He's a box guy. He can't run. And late in that Eagle game, they matched Jordan Matthews up against him on a corner route. It was beastly bad. They flagged him for illegal contact, and Matthews just beat him by 5 yards, 24-yard touchdown. So that's a problem. If Quinn doesn't play, Green Bay can match up on Ahedibo and win deep, no question. Okay, other injuries, Larry Warford, the starting right guard, maybe their second or third best O-lineman, maybe their first. I mean, you could argue that. He suffered a concussion on a pull about 8 minutes to go in the Eagle game. Hit helmets with D'Amico Ryan, the middle backer. It was a nasty-looking collision. He stayed in the lineup for two more plays. He's got a concussion. No idea if he plays.
Did D'Amico get hurt in that, or just
Warford? No.
Just Warford.
Manny Ramirez, the old veteran, he once was with the Lions way back, drafted him, and then he was a Broncos starter. He started like 7 games at guard when there was injuries. He would start. He's okay. And the other injury really is Lance Moore, their number 3 receiver, who caught the winning touchdown pass against Green Bay. Lance Moore's got an ankle injury, and that's iffy. So if he can't play, you're talking about Corey Fuller, a third-year guy with great speed, but he's never really caught many balls. If they went 3 wide, it'd be him. Otherwise, Eric Ebron, the tight end with wide receiver speed, would go to the slot, kind of, and then they play Brandon Pettigrew. Pettigrew's played a lot the last 2 weeks over Ebron. Ebron dropped a couple balls in Green Bay. He's had drop problems all season. He's a talent, but he's never really done it yet.
Fuller made one of the key blocks on that reverse to Golden Tate in the game.
Did he really?
Here at Lambeau, yeah.
Okay.
There was one by Fuller and one by their fullback, whose name I can't remember.
Mr. Michael Burton.
Yes, Burton. Mm-hmm. So it was Fuller in the backfield, and then Burton had gotten around to the edge. I remember that.
Okay, I'll mention this, Mike, on offense.
Sure.
Michael Ola, who replaced LaAdrian Waddle for the second series against Green Bay. Ola's held that job ever since that play in the third series against Green Bay. He's a former Bear, kind of a handyman, 12-game starter last year, 4 positions. Waddle, I don't know what it is, never really came back from that ACL or the bad knee surgery in December. I think it was an ACL. Ola's a little undersized, not real long with the arms, but he's been better than the other guys, so he's got to, you know, compete against Julius Peppers on turf, so that's not an easy assignment. They're staying with Travis Swanson at center. Riley Reiff had some really bad plays against the Eagles. I don't know. He's a guard, I think. Calvin Johnson and Golden Tate are coming off 2 really big games. In those 2 games, Johnson, the Oakland victory and the Philly victory, Johnson's 13 for 181, 3 touchdowns. Tate's 15 for 123 and 1 touchdown.
All 3 touchdowns for Johnson came against the Eagles.
Yep,
on
right.
Thanksgiving.
And they've kind of gone to Amir Abdullah now. You know, they started Joique Bell as the running back against Green Bay, played Abdullah some. But now the last 2 weeks, it's gone back to Abdullah. And Abdullah has stopped fumbling. And the last 2 games, he's 28 for 107. Not great, but the Lions average 69.8 rushing in the first 8 games. The last 2, they're at 108. So they got some semblance of a ground game right now.
Yeah, I mean, Abdullah, obviously, we saw on that kickoff return to begin the second half here at Lambeau with tremendous speed, looked like good vision, and although somehow Micah Hyde caught him, which I still can't understand. But
yeah.
If it seems like, you know, obviously the fumbling is the big problem with him, but I really like the rest of his attributes. I think he's fast. I think he can run tough, and I think if he can hold on to the ball, I mean, they've got a player there, I think.
It's not a bad threesome. You know, Bell's a short yardage back. I mean, he's all right. And this Theo Riddick, he's got more catches by a running back than anybody in the football. He's got 55 catches, Mike. And again, he ran some
V
cuts.
He's a former wide receiver.
Riddick?
Riddick was a wide receiver at Notre Dame.
Okay. He looks like it. V cuts, option routes. I mean, he was just spinning Eagles around. He's a real factor. He's a very impressive player. So that's their role. You got Stafford, who's done well with the change in coordinators to Jim Bob Cooter from Joe Lombardi, and he seems more confident. The biggest thing probably is they're protecting him better. And Stafford has had The last two games, his rating's 116.2. He had 5 touches against the Eagles, 0 picks. So that's where they're at. All right, on defense, that's a good coordinator, Terrell Austin. Their running defense has been the big change. The first 8 games, they allowed 133.6. The last 3, 55.7.
Wow, that's a serious improvement.
Green Bay had 47 yards rushing against the Lions. Remember how physical they were that day?
Oh, yeah.
Yep. All right, the front. Ziggy Ansah, 3.5 sacks against the Eagles. He's hard to handle.
So athletic.
Yep. Nada, Haloti Nada. Wow, he had a power bull rush. I mean, he just collapsed Matt Tobin, the right guard for the Eagles, shoved him over. Ansah was there first, but, you know, I think Nada's playing better. I really do. He was not highly thought of early in the year, but I think he's getting in some kind of game shape right now. He's a tough guy. 2 ex-Packers are in the picture. C.J. Wilson arrived from Oakland at mid-year about a month ago, and Kyree Thornton cutting all this stuff with the Patriots.
Thornton's third team this year.
Yeah. Kyrie's back. Now, Gabe Wright, a good-looking rookie from Auburn, has been injured. Don't know if he'll play. And Cujo, a former Ram, has been injured. Don't know if he'll play. So that's given Wilson and Thornton the chance. Wilson's played about 70 snaps in the last 3 games, and, you know, he can hold the point. You see this guy in the Eagle tape. He's just the way he was here. He's a tough guy at the point of attack. He's a hard-charging guy, and I'm sure he's really motivated about playing against the Packers again. And Thornton, he's played about 55 snaps the last 2 weeks, and he's had 3 tackles now. Not saying he's great, but he wasn't horse bleep in the Eagle game. He wasn't that terrible. Okay, so that's that. The backers, Tahir Whitehead, a guy who's got really good speed and toughness. He's kind of out of the doghouse right now. He's way ahead of Travis Lewis. What he was doing playing behind Travis Lewis early in the year, that's a mystery for the ages. But Whitehead's a good player. Tulloch, we know he's physical. He can't run. And Bynes can't really run either, but he's kind of a vibrant leader guy.
Tulloch is a real presence in the box, especially against the run. I mean, there were plays where he would get into the backfield, and not only would he hit you and hit you hard, but he would get up and let you know he hit you hard. He was showboating or hollering and things like that. And so he's just kind of that nasty presence in the middle for them. I like what he does in the run game.
He's 5'10 and a half. Do you know what happened to him last year in Ford Field against the Packers?
No.
He got a sack on Rodgers, and then he started jumping around. He blew his ACL, Mike.
Really? Jumping up and down? Wow.
Exactly. Okay, the secondary, Darius Slay. You know, he doesn't really think well on his feet. That's the knock on him, and that is a problem, but he can cover anybody. The other side, Nevin Lawson. What did you think against him in the first Packer game?
Well, Nevin Lawson, I thought, played a really good game. You know, I thought he played physical at the line of scrimmage. He really, I mean, if the referees are going to let you get away with hand fighting, then he did a better job getting away with it than the Packers did combating it. I thought he, for a game where the refs were letting things go, I thought he maximized his opportunities. And, you know, him and Slay played terrific games. Slay covered James Jones that day? I can't remember.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Slay was on James Jones, and Jones had 0 catches.
Mm-hmm.
Twice in the last 3 weeks, Jones has had 0 catches in a game. And in between, he had right. 6 catches for 100 right. yards and a touchdown. It's crazy. And Lawson matched up with
Adams on the 22
that's right.
targets that
That's
day.
Right, on the 22 mm-hmm. targets. Yep.
And did well.
He did very well.
Obviously very well. All right, the nickelback in that first Packer game was Josh Wilson. But he wrecked his knee, season-ending injury, in that Packer game. So now it's Quandre Diggs, a 5th or a 6th round pick, a rookie from Texas.
Okay.
You watch Diggs out here. He's a short area burst guy. He's got swagger, Mike. He's one of these 5'9 corners. Lawson's 5'9 as well. But Diggs is going to be in your face, and he's going to be covering, trying to cover Cobb. He will not back down. This guy, you see everything about that guy in that Eagle game. He's a confident, cocky guy, and you're going to have to beat him.
How much has Butler played since that one debut against the Packers?
He's the number 4 guy, but not much.
Not much.
They're pretty much, the Whitehead stays on the nickel, you know.
But he made that big play when it mattered.
Boy, did he
ever. Stripping that ball out of Davante Adams' hands on that 2-point conversion.
Yep. Ahedebo and Abdul
Qaddus.
Qaddus. I don't have that name. Okay.
That's how it was pronounced on TV. I don't know if that's right or wrong.
If Quinn, we're assuming Quinn doesn't play, but then Don Carey. He's been around there for like 4 years. He has started games against Green Bay and against others for Detroit at safety. He can run. I wouldn't be surprised if we see some of Don Carey. He's not the worst player in the world, and he's definitely faster than a headable.
Any changes on special teams?
Nope, they're all the same. Tate and Abdul are a tremendous pair of returners. Martin does the kickoffs and the punts. He's good. And Prater, you know, Prater's 14 of 14, although he missed three extra points, including...
Figure that one out.
Two against the pack. Yep.
Yep.
All right, that's the Lions.
So, obviously, we just went through what the Lions have gone through on the field, but let's kind of talk about some of the stuff that's been going on away from Ford Field and other places. Obviously, there were front office and coaching changes immediately prior to the game against the Packers the last time that they played, but there's been some progress in sort of occupying those roles and what they're going to do going forward.
Right. Mrs. Ford, she...
Martha, right?
Yes. She hired Rod Wood, a Ford executive and Ford family friend, 55 years old. She hired him as president right off the ball. So 2 weeks into the search or whatever, she goes and hires him, a trusted friend and confidant, I assume. Wood did a press conference. I read the entire thing. He came across pretty well. He kind of said he doesn't know everything, and which he doesn't in football, but he's going to have charge of the business operation, and the GM will have total control of football. So the GM will have the power to hire and fire the coach. That's certainly what total control of football means to me. And now they got to get a guy. So along towards that end, they hired Ernie Accorsi, the former Giant GM and Baltimore Colt PR guy early in his career, and he was a sports writer as well. So Ernie Accorsi, you know, the others who've been doing that stuff in recent years have been Ron Wolf and Charlie Casserly. They went with Accorsi. No idea if they're interested in Elliot Wolf, and they didn't want Ron because of that. No clue about that. And so Accorsi will head up the search, and on that search committee will be Rod Wood, Mrs. Ford, and her four children?
I don't know how many children she has.
Three daughters and a son or two daughters and a son, I forget. And they're going to try to get the GM, then that's next.
What type of a time frame does that take, do you think?
Well, they could interview GM candidates if the guy is not a GM.
Right.
I mean, if he's an assistant GM, I believe they can interview him soon. Packers interviewed Ron Wolf when he was, you know, director of player personnel for the Jets in 91 and got that done in late November. So I would think they're going to start doing some stuff pretty darn soon.
Okay. Anything else with the Lions?
I don't think so. It'll be a tough environment over there to win at.
It will, especially because they're coming off a Thanksgiving game where they played so darn well.
They've won three in a row after a 1-7 start.
Yep.
They're kind of front runners in Detroit. Their fans tend to be like that. They're involved and passionate, but they do kind of they quit on the team earlier than, well, everybody does earlier than in Green Bay, but they do kind of have that reputation. I've seen that Ford Field and the Silverdome just empty early on when the team's not playing well. But, boy, it'll be a loud thing. And if Green Bay doesn't take that crowd out of it, the longer it goes, the more trouble it'll be for the Packers.
When they came up here, they snapped the streak. Hadn't won in the state of Wisconsin since 1991. I asked you the other day, and I know you've looked up the answer since then, when was the last time that the Lions swept the Packers 2-0 in a season?
1991, Mike. Yep, they swept them there under Wayne Fonts. And I believe since that sweep, since the start of the 92, I believe Green Bay is 36-13 against Detroit. They have dominated that division.
What a surprise it would be if the Lions swept them in this particular season.
Just think of it.
I don't even know.
Yeah.
It'd be wild.
Yes, it would.
We got a few more days to go, but now we're going to take a short break, and we'll come back and wrap this podcast up.
At Cannon and Dunphy, we're proud of our winning reputation. We're also proud to be the exclusive sponsor of the excellent Journal Sentinel coverage of our great football team. I'm Bill Cannon. To learn more about our winning team, go to our website.
So, Mike, I was reading my Sunday Journal Sentinel today, and there was an interesting story by you on cryotherapy.
Yes.
Tell us more.
So a friend of mine who goes to the – or worked at the same gym that I went to told me, you know, way back, like really close to the time that I first got here, that he was going to be opening up a cryotherapy place, and he said he was hoping to get some of the Packers involved. And he said if, you know, if the Packers did end up going to his facility or whatever, some of the players, would I be interested in writing about it? And I said, yeah, sure, so keep me in the loop. So he followed through. They opened up their business for a soft opening in October, and the grand opening was November 2nd. It's called Cryotherapy of Wisconsin. And basically what you do is you walk into this chamber that looks like a soda can. The door opens, you get inside. You're covered up to your neck, and you go a couple short intervals of frigid, frigid cold temperatures that get all the way down to about negative 250 degrees Fahrenheit. And what it's supposed to do is trigger the fight or flight response in your body. Your body thinks that you're going into hypothermia, so what it does is it sends all the blood to your core, and then when you get out of it, the blood spreads back to your other limbs after it's been enriched with nutrients and oxygen from your core area. And then it's supposed to make you heal faster and heal better and things like that. And it turns out a number of the Packer players are going to this facility. Clay Matthews, BJ Raji, Dayton Jones, Mike Neal, and a few others have gone there. So I got a chance to try it out, and it was something, man. It was something.
How long are you in this chamber?
So since I had never done it before, they recommend that beginners or first-time users go in there for 2 minutes, then you come back out for about a minute or two, then you go back in and you do 90 seconds because the second one ends up feeling colder even though it's a shorter duration because your body temperature has not gone all the way back up yet from the first dose. So before you go into the dressing room and you take off all your clothes except for your underwear. And so I wore socks, slippers, which you have to wear because of your extremities and, you know, the extreme cold. Mm-hmm. So you wear socks, slippers. I wore, you know, boxer shorts and gloves. And that's it. And it's, I mean, it's something. It's not just for athletes. You know, their target demographic is active and older baby boomers who may have pain or things like that. And you know, it's for athletes and non-athletes, adults and children. It was like nothing I've ever experienced, and it's something else. But yeah, you know, the guys basically said that it's a streamlined, expedited version of the old school cold tub. Raji said he likes the cryotherapy much better just because he doesn't like the water in the cold tub, doesn't want to get into the wetness. You know, Clay Matthews said it's just much faster and easier. It's 10 minutes for him to drive, or 5 minutes really to drive over there, you know, 6 minutes in the chamber, 5 minutes to drive back. So it takes 15 to 20 minutes of his day, whereas sitting in a cold tub could take much longer. So basically the location, the speed, you know, the fact that you don't have to dip yourself into a tub, they all like those aspects of it. So it's an interesting new age treatment.
What next, huh, Mike?
I don't know. There's so much stuff out there to try. But like I said, I got a chance to try it out. It was an interesting experience.
Thanks.
Fun little story. But before we wrap up here, we'll take one or two questions here. We've almost run out of time, so we'll keep this a little bit shorter. Let's see. Well, we got a question here from Terry Kohler, more of a statement than a question. He said, Bob and Michael, just give me something to be optimistic about with this team.
All right, Mike, it's now 3 o'clock. We have no idea what happened in the NFL today.
Correct.
We have no scores. I taped some games. I'm going to go watch them later. As we speak, they're half a game behind the Vikings. The Vikings have a tough schedule. They own the tiebreaker over the Vikings. The Packers always play better late than early. There's a lot of talent on this team. It's my job for 30-plus years to know how the Packers personnel compares to others around the league. And I'm telling you that they have a tremendous quarterback. That's the most important position in football, as we all know. And they have good players throughout their roster. There is no reason that they shouldn't be a playoff team. Probably the only thing that isn't that is gone right now would be the number one seed. They were a number six seed when they won the Super Bowl in 2010. They are an underachieving team, perhaps as underachieving as any that I've covered here. It's up to this. Players are players, and it's up to the head coach and the head coach's assistant coaches to get this out of these players. And that's really all I can say.
All right, we got one more here from Peter Bukowski.
All right, Mike. Peter writes, the team seemed patient, optimistic through the losing streak until this week. Now they seem ticked. What's your impression, Michael?
Well, the Packers lost three in a row. They came back and then beat the Vikings and obviously lost this past Thursday. So they've dropped four out of five. And I actually think that Peter's observation is pretty spot on. I remember that after the Lions game, I expected to go into a locker room that was more or less comatose, really quiet, guys not wanting to say a whole lot, extremely frustrated, disappointed, dejected. And it really wasn't what I expected. The guys were certainly disappointed that they lost, as they would be after any game. But I sort of came out of that room thinking, like, these guys think that they're going to turn it around. You know, they stressed that there was progress made, especially on the defensive side of the ball. They weren't gashed for the first time in a couple weeks. And, you know, they thought that things were going to come together and play better. And then they went to Minnesota and put a whooping on the Vikings, really. But after this game, as you mentioned, Peter, I thought there was more frustration in the locker room. Guys were snippy. Guys were short. Guys were terse. You know, Dayton Jones, we went over those comments and the things that he said. You know, McCarthy at his post-game press conference said that, or excuse me, at his press conference on Friday morning said that, you know, receivers should stop worrying about the play calls and just, you know, do what they're supposed to do, win the route, win the play. And things just seemed a little bit chippier. It'll be interesting to see whether that sort of anxiousness has been quelled a little bit when we go into the locker room later today on Sunday after their first practice of the week. But I definitely sensed a little bit more consternation on their part after the loss to the Bears. I think that was one that really, really stung. So it'll be interesting to see how they manage that going forward. And I can't even imagine what the mood would be if they dropped one to the Lions this week.
And so it's on to Ford Field, huh?
On to Ford Field. I'm trying to think. Is this the first dome that I've been to since the Carrier Dome?
Really?
Well, I covered college football. Those games were outdoors. And the only NFL games I covered since then were in Nashville. So I think this is the first football game I will have seen in the dome since then.
Okay. Yeah. That's interesting.
We'll have to see how it plays out, I guess. I don't know. We got the Packers favored by about four right now.
Okay.
Think that line goes up or down before Thursday?
I was thinking it was going to be Green Bay favored by three, I think I thought.
Okay, so maybe it shrinks a little bit.
Yeah.
We'll have to see. But anyway, we've come to the end of another episode of the podcast. Thank you guys, as always, for listening. We'd like to thank Cannon and Dunphy for their support of this podcast and of our Journal Sentinel coverage of the Packers. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Let's bring on Mr. Carlton.
See ya.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right here,
right now. Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.